Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by the Karina Owens, who is one of the heaviest hitters in the ABM space. And I'm just incredibly excited to dig into her playbook that she has lovingly titled The Churn Buster. It reminds me of like a Hulkbuster suit from Iron Man. Anyway, that said, Karina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Mason. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Churn Buster, what are we digging into today? What is the purpose of this playbook?
I think to launch any successful play, I love for it to have two purposes. And so for me, this type of playbook was really good for identifying net new opportunities in your target account list, but also to help CS side of the house, make sure that there's churn prevention tactics in place, because I've always feel like they're pretty underserved. And so this Churn Buster playbook suits both of those sides of the house.
I love it. So again, when we're thinking through building this playbook out, it's obviously a pretty significant focus on the CS team, which I love because we actually haven't had a ton of CS focused ABM playbooks. But again, I think it's one of the best places to actually build an ABM program. That said, what technology are you using to actually identify your target accounts for this program?
Yeah, so this was something that came up in my early days at Gong. I wanted to identify what were those key signals of what could make a deal really successful for us. So meaning high ACV, all the right stakeholders are involved, good client sentiment, and shorter sales cycles. And in reviewing SMB accounts that we had closed and won, I realized that our champions were actually leaving those accounts at a really high rate. This was back in like 2021 to 2022. And I realized they were actually going to enterprise accounts. So that was a curated list of accounts that were their must-win accounts. We were really trying to break into the enterprise space at Gong. And so I saw two opportunities there. One that was definitely a way into these accounts that weren't really familiar with Gong. At the time, our messaging was still really playful and kind of geared more towards the sales manager, not so much the CRO. So there was a lot of opportunity there to get in touch with those people that did know us from that branding and messaging really well, but then elevate the conversation as they were elevated to these new positions. So from like director of sales to VP of sales or CRO and so on. And I realized that this was actually becoming a problem. It was an opportunity for the enterprise space, but it was actually a problem for the SMB space that we were losing track of those champions. And nobody was really aware of that. There wasn't any kind of signal or automation. It was something that, you know, you would have to really dig into, build some LinkedIn sales navigators list, send some Slack messages, update the team, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to find a way to automate that signal. One, so we could update our CRM and alert our teams accordingly, but then also two, so that we could actually reach out to those champions. So all of this to say is that it kind of started in the CRM. And that's something that I know most marketers will go to, most salespeople won't. But that to me was the goal mine of, okay, well, how am I going to build a plan for going after enterprise accounts when we don't really have any foothold or track hold there? Okay, well, I'm going to start in our CRM where I know we have some good data. And that was all the data around SMB, et cetera.
I love it. And again, I just think some people don't think about first place to start for an ABM program. They go look out for new data. And it's, well, if you looked in at your existing data, you likely have a great place to get started. And it's not going to be super complicated. It's going to probably be some pretty good data, depending you've got a good ops team in place. So yeah, I love that we looked first to the CRM in order to find like, who are these people we should be going after? I also know I got to give a shout out to our friends over at User Gems. You are like a massive champion for User Gems. And it sounds like this is also like a fantastic label that could be scaled through User Gems.
You're spot on. And I love that you called out that going to your first party data first before third party. User Gems is like their master at their craft. They know what they're doing. This is their gold mine, is identifying job movement, right? But that's not going to be meaningful unless you're giving them your own data. So who are those key accounts that you want to go after? Who are those personas? Who are those champions? So who are the people that are, you know, on your case studies, giving you 5-star reviews on, you know, different crowd sites? So you still have to inform these third-party vendors that are providing data back to you about what does good look like for you. So I love that you highlighted that. And you're exactly right. User Gems is definitely the signal here that became like the most adopted outbound strategy for all of our teams across SMB, mid-market, and enterprise.
I love it. So once we've identified the audience and we've got a clear trigger being, hey, they moved to a new job, that both triggers our CS team to think about how we can retain these accounts, but also then triggers our sales team to go after new accounts. How did you actually get in front of these people? What were the tactics that you guys started to run?
Yeah, great question. So first and foremost, I wanted all of our outreach to be hyper personalized, but also very much from like a giving mentality. So what we did was we created a sequence that was designed to be customized. So nothing was just like automated and ready to go. It was sequenced for you, but you had to actually enter in personalized details. And so a lot of this was getting those account holders at the net new enterprise account to connect with the CSMs at the account that champion just left from and start to have a dialogue. So what made them like a raving fan of our solution? What are some key successes that they can highlight? We then took that back and personalized that in a outreach. And so that incorporated some LinkedIn touch points, some calls, direct mail, email sequences. But it again was all from the let's lift up this champion in their new role. What information can we do to help them be most successful? So we actually created something that could be customized, but largely was something that could stand alone too, which was like a 90-day sales leader checklist. So here are all the different things that you can do to set yourself up for success, in addition to just surrounding them with some general love and praise. And oddly enough, we found that they were such champions that they actually wanted, out of all the gift options we provided them, they actually always went back to merch. They always wanted to have our brand's merch. Yeah. So that was a really cool finding for somebody, even at that seniority too.
Well, it's also just such a, like an interesting signal probably that if you ever had the outlier that like didn't get Gong merch, they're like, oh, they're probably not going to close. Cause if everybody else is getting Gong, that just is so cool from a brand affinity perspective.
Yeah. 100%.
So the other question I just had real quick is you referenced some content assets that are like a 90-day checklist type thing. Were these content assets you already kind of had lying around, or were these bespoke to this campaign that you built out?
Yeah, so we were inspired by content that already existed. And I think I'm really glad you call that out, because there's so much, I think a lot of times when we talk to people, probably you too, they think that if you've started an ABM program or even ABM tactic, that you've got to start from scratch. We didn't do that. We looked at what was already working and made it seem really custom and bespoke, but it was completely inspired from content that's been created before that we knew would resonate, we knew would work well.
Yeah, I love the call out of just, hey, we already probably are producing a lot of content. What is already working well? And then let's like change probably 10, 15% of it, or repackage it in a checklist format and then redistribute it in a way that has fresh eyes. It's really funny when we're helping some of our clients build some stuff out, because they're like, well, we've already sent them this content. I was like, yes, but like probably 15% click-through rate. So 85% of the people you sent it to didn't even open it the first time. Just repurpose, reuse, recycle, keep sending out the same messages. Because it's still right message, right time, right place. And even though you got right place and maybe right person, it may not have been the right time for them to view that content quite yet.
100%.
Awesome. So before digging anything else around kind of budgets and unexpected roadblocks, were there any other like tactics that you guys were running that ensured once they actually got the merch, like how did you then follow up to book the meeting?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing was that it was the signal that was most impactful. So it was more about like timing of outreach. So I would say overwhelmingly, this sequence that had like roughly 14 steps, it didn't really need to go past step two. So step one was just reaching out, congratulating, and gifting. Step two was that content checklist. And most of the touch points for these didn't go past step two. So many of them converted from step one or step two. And that just goes to show that focus on the signals that matter most to your business that you know are going to move the needle most, double down all your efforts there, right? It's like an 80-20 rule that I like to apply. Where can I spend the bulk of my efforts? And then where can I spend that little bit of time to customize, tweak, and make something really unique and different? And the interesting thing too was that we would get replies. So not just like open, but we would get replies off of these outreaches saying, oh my God, I'm so glad you reached out. I had planned to reach out anyways, but you beat me to the punch. This is so helpful. Let me add you to this meeting that I'm going to have with my team next week. We can review how we can co-sell together. Something like that was incredible. We also got outreaches saying, this is amazing. I'm sending to my marketing team so we can copy and replicate. So I think it's all about finding what signal matters most. And then of course, knowing what is going to be most meaningful to your audience. And in this case, we tried to lead with as little get as possible and really just focus on the give and let them know that, hey, we're still your champion, whether you are at this, you know, current contract or not.
Yeah. First of all, two touches and then meetings is insane. Right. Second of all, I just think it goes to show that, you know, we're helping some of our clients with their content led outbound programs. And they're like, well, when do we ask for the sale? And I'm like, in your signature, like the email signature should have a meeting link. Outside of that, the goal is to show up and be helpful.
Yeah.
Because if you're consistently there and helpful, people will inevitably buy from you. That's it. I love how beautifully illustrated that is in this example.
Yeah, it's funny. I still look at sequences today for my clients and I find that the push, like the ask for the book, the meeting, it's sometimes the first step in their sequence. And I say, just remove it altogether. We need to start educating. We need to start being helpful. We can't be assuming that there is something, you know, the client's just gonna be ready to sign on the dotted line. Like, we have to warm up to them. So yeah, like signal, messaging, those are pairing those together correctly can lead to like really amazing results.
I love it. The only other thing I am curious about is just from the CS side, you know, what are we doing to enable our CS teams to actually retain these companies in the SMB space?
Yeah. So I think the interesting thing was how much of a surprise the signal was to the CS team. There were not any kind of indications either like in the product or in their correspondence that this was an event that was going to happen. So for them, they were just by the signal alone, were incredibly grateful because that indicated to them that they needed to start to identify new champions at those accounts. The signal was super important, but then it was actually educating them on, okay, what are some pieces of content and ways that we can get ahead of this? So one of the things we implemented was essentially we would bring in a specialist on our team to kind of highlight new opportunities that we thought were not being surfaced at an account. So pulling together different call libraries and different trigger events and tying it to what we were seeing work with other industries and saying, hey, here's an opportunity for you to double down and make sure you do hit this quarterly initiative. Were we right on the money or not? And that made it much easier then for them to kind of try and get new champions because we were doing something that was honestly like intensive work for our team to surface some insights and put together some things that they didn't even ask for. So a lot of assumptions, but from a good place of data informed assumptions, having other contacts in their industry that we knew like a signal like this would be really important for them. A sequence like this would be really important for them. And then that allowed them to not just be banging on doors, asking for time and asking for a meeting, but it seemed like it was something that was a truly organic outreach of, hey, we saw this at your account. We saw this work at another account. Here's why I'm reaching out. So we stripped away completely. Hey, you know, so-and-so left the account. I need to identify a new stakeholder. Please get on the phone with me.
Yeah, that's so smart. Again, it's just exactly what you said. You're leading with value. And then because of the context of we actually have a lot of data, like we can actually come with not generalized best practice value, but like very specific tactical, tangible value based on their existing data. That's so smart.
I just remembered it. Value engineering. That was the team that we leveraged a lot for net new that we then lent that effort to them in the churn prevention. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So as we think through then kind of overall budgets, I mean, this sounds not like a super expensive net new program. It just sounds like it takes time.
Spot on. It takes a lot of time. And I think the thing here that took the most time that was actually a little bit surprising to me was the enablement side of it. So not only did we make sure that things were set up from a MOPS perspective and a RevOps perspective, so syncing all the systems, making sure that the alerts were correct, making sure that we had sequences set up and ready to go, the enablement with the sales team on both sides of the house, so net new and customer retention, that took the longest. I would say overall, it probably took 2 quarters for them to get really comfortable with not just understanding why the signal mattered, but understanding how to kind of change their sales efforts a bit. You know, I think that the people get in such a rhythm of hit this many dials, hit this many meetings, lead with this like value prop first, then hit him with this, that when I offered something that was slightly different, that wasn't, you know, as brand serving, that it was more the servant, like serving the customer or serving the future customer, it took some time. So we probably held, I would say, maybe one training session a week for 2 quarters, just to ensure that we were getting the most adoption we could from both sides of the house. So yeah, I mean, I think that was really surprising. So to your point, it took a lot of resource, I would say, from a time perspective. But I don't think that we would have seen the numbers that we saw from these programs if we didn't invest all that time and effort and energy.
Yeah. Speaking of seeing a lot of return and results and positive responses, what were some of the results that you were able to see through this program?
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm still in touch with many of my team members from my days at Gong. It's still the number one outbound program for them. So they're still generating most of their quality pipeline from this signal and the corresponding actions with it. I think that's another thing too. You know, at the time, it was very manual to get all of our different technology to connect and make sense. Now I know a lot of the tech has evolved actually to make it a little bit more seamless, but at the time, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't as easy to get set up and running. It was definitely more labor intensive. But yeah, no, the results were that we were actually producing net new quality pipeline for a segment of the business that was the most challenging to do that for. So that was really incredible to see. And I'm really proud that it's still something that's still such a strong program for them today.
No, I love it. And again, I've talked with UserGems themselves. They generate 23% of their revenue every year through Champion Tracking. I worked in an organization that was a sales training company that sourced 30% of the revenue through Champion Tracking. I mean, the opportunity to just like resell people that have already believed in you and purchased from you previously, I still do not understand how it is not a staple once you've gotten to 5 million ARR. Because at that point, you've got enough people that you could just re-engage, even if it's not a fully scalable automated program using some tools, just like the intentionality to just think, how do I keep up with people that have already purchased from me and liked me? That's it.
I think people hearing this might hear, you know, Gong or sales and marketing technology and think, well, duh, like that's going to be a really high volume and such a low-hanging fruit opportunity. But I'm working with clients that are much more traditional industries that are much more, you know, privacy-centric and not as all about the bells and whistles. And the volume of movement from this type of signal of Champion Tracking is nowhere near as high. But it doesn't mean that it's any less important, because to your point, we know already that selling to customers that you've sold to before that are happy, like that's just a no-brainer. But the problem is that we're not optimizing our day-to-day strategies of who we're outbounding to with that kind of methodology in mind. So even if you're not seeing the same kind of volume that you would expect some of these companies that we're talking about to see, it's still worthwhile, especially to your point, if you're at a certain maturity in your business, one job movement could lead to a very high ACV client at a net new company. So do you need thousands of those? No, maybe you just need a couple dozen a quarter. And that's probably going to be a stronger way for you to hit your target than just kind of, you know, doing the old spray and pray model.
Yeah, I could not be more aligned. All that to say, speaking of alignment, you asked me to ask you a fun question. And I always am so fun at parties because I just keep talking about why ABM fails all the time.
Do not.
Yeah, no, I just... People are like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, here's how I make sure that people don't fail their ABM programs. It's such a good time. And I'm just curious because, again, some of the detail that we've gone into on past conversations just around how you fostered the alignment in the enterprise segment with enterprise AEs going in like one-to-one or one-to-few programs is admittedly kind of legendary in the ABM space. So I'm just curious for you, like, how do you actually address the alignment between sales and marketing? And not the like, because everybody talks about the, oh, sales says leads and marketing says leads. I mean, like once we have our definitions, we're actually using the same words and mean the same things. There's still often a lack of alignment. It's like, how have you helped to solve for that?
Yeah, I think that I've been lucky in my career that I was often the first marketing hire. And so what that meant was that I had to be kind of I had to be a champion for all the different teams that I would interface with. And that meant that I had to speak their language and understand their goals, their priorities, like what are they faced with their boss? What are they faced with ELT? So as part of coming onto any company, whether it be in a full-time role or, you know, contractual, I want to make sure that I meet with those different stakeholders and not just the head of the department, but the people within it too. Like, how are they told that they're going to be measured on success? What are their quarterly reviews going to look like? What are their missed targets? What's really working? What's not? I mean, all the way down to, you know, making sure they're involved in new content that's being created. I think that's just, yeah, I've worked at some incredible organizations and, you know, the content has never touched the sales team who is going to be pushing said content. And I think that is really important. So I show up as really like a servant, like leadership type of mentality. And I'll ask to come to meetings where they're reviewing pipeline, and I'll come prepared with data and insights in a way that's going to make sense to them. So I'm not going to just schedule some automated reports from a tool that they're never logging into. They don't understand the definition of it. They don't know how to use it. I'm going to come and I'm going to speak their language of, hey, you know, I was able to find that so-and-so was spending this amount of time on our site. They actually are also appearing in a lot of different competitive, you know, signals as well. Here are some ways I feel like we can together go after and surround this account and this person. You know, what are your thoughts? So I think sometimes we, you know, as marketers, can get caught up in our own vernacular, our own terminology, our own like best interests. And we,
us?
Yeah. I mean, I still catch myself saying something sometime and I'm like, I constantly preach to get rid of acronyms. It's just so embedded in our conversation and how we speak. Even ABM, like I do think one day that's just going to go away completely. I don't think we're going to keep saying account-based marketing. We've already tried to change it to ABX. We're now trying to say GTM with everything. It's just, we're always changing it because we're never solving the problem. And one of those problems with ABM and why we made it ABX is that we wanted all go-to-market teams to be aligned and be part of it. We didn't just want marketing to be represented. So anyways, I'm rambling, but all this to say is that you do have to have one voice. You should be optimized on one goal. And if you, as a marketing leader, are truly like the steward of your account data, both the account data who you're trying to prospect into, but also the account data for your team, then you should be showing up in a way that is unifying and telling a story that makes sense. So I don't know. It's a long-winded answer, but I think there's just so much opportunity that I don't understand why it's still sales and marketing alignment is still a keynote topic. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of keep waiting for the day where some of the reports come out on like why ABM fails and the number one reason isn't sales and marketing alignment. I feel like when that happens, we know that we will actually have made some progress in what we're trying to accomplish. So all that to say, again, it sounds like it just continually comes back to, I appreciated the framing of you're actually like the evangelist with them, like you're in it with them of, hey, this isn't just an automated report so you can see all your shiny account engagement that means nothing to most anybody. It's like, how does that actually convert into who I talk to today?
Yeah.
So I think that's a great framing. Karina, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining and sharing some wisdom and some insights. If people are interested in learning more about you and finding out where you live, like where would you point them?
Thanks, Mason. I really appreciate this and appreciate everything you're doing for our community. I am living on LinkedIn and LinkedIn alone, so you can find me there.
I love it. And I'm going to plug you. If you need a fractional ABM leader, that's what Karina does. So full-time helping people build out ABM programs. And she's, again, someone that I've learned a lot from. So if you're looking for someone to help you with that, go check out Karina. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.